Welcome, everyone, to episode 399 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're about a quarter of the way through the season, so finally the small sample size is not that small. So we're going to give our early takes about how some of the most notable rookies are doing so far. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. We're recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed. Engage with us in real time or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. We are also being supported today by Manscaped, so you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code NBAPOD at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code NBAPOD. Your balls will thank you. On that note, I am joined today, as always, by my co-host Morten Jensen. Mort, how is it going?
It is going well. Just saw the news about Karis LeVert having undergone surgery and the fact that he's going to be fine. So that's great, objectively great, and something I very much look forward to. I've said this on numerous occasions. I just look forward to seeing a fully healthy Pacers team at some point. Maybe we'll get that later on this year. I mean, he's out indefinitely. We don't have a date, but maybe he returns. Maybe it's next year. But I'm just counting down the days until we see a fully healthy Pacers team.
Should be somewhere around 2023 that we finally get to realize that dream. Yeah. Well, Mort, today we want to talk about rookies because as much as this draft class was maligned, and I mean, we had 5 extra months for people to crap all over it, given the COVID pandemic pushing it back until November.
Right.
I'll be honest, like, I think there have been a lot of pretty good rookies, especially given the circumstances. I mean, heading into the season, we were kind of downplaying expectations and saying, you know, they had a month between when they got drafted and when the season started, no summer league, no real offseason to get used to their team. So it's probably going to be hard for a lot of these guys to break into the rotation right away. And that really hasn't been the case. So, Mort, which rookie has stood out most to you so far?
Well, that's a difficult question because it really depends on, you know, team and situation, all that. But let me just start out by saying that I ultimately think we landed right near my expectation level, at least. I think this is roughly what I expected coming in. Like, you don't have that clear-cut number one guy. You might not even have a clear-cut number two guy. But it's okay because you have a lot of depth. These guys can become something down the line. You know, some of them are already projecting as pretty decent, if not downright good role players, maybe even in the year two and year three scenario. So I'm, like you, optimistic, but I think they landed like where they should be. And in terms of the rookie that I've been most impressed by so far, and keep in mind, I mean, this is still early and everything is kind of messed up. I'm splitting that into two. It's Tyrese Halliburton from the Sacramento Kings, obviously, and it's Patrick Williams from the Chicago Bulls.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, I know, let's go into Halliburton first then, because I know you were, I don't want to say down on him, but at least you had heard some things heading into the draft that made you skeptical.
Right, yeah, we can just run through that real quick. I had heard from a very reliable source that his jump shot was just way too slow. That my source had attended a workout with numerous scouts and even some general managers and watched him shoot and run around, and apparently a lot of them just kind of had big eyes afterwards, like very concerned about the slowness of his shooting release. And, you know, it is slow, but I think people just completely underestimated, myself included, having heard that his intelligence level just kind of makes up for it. the fact that Tyrese Haliburton has a very slow release point is something he's well aware of. And he's just decided, you know what, I'm going to work with it in some capacity. I'm going to take wide open shots. When I come off a screen, I'm going to gauge like the space that I have. I'm not going to rush anything. And as a result, he is shooting 47% from three. Going into next year's draft, I am actually going to downplay shooting a little bit more, because I think he is a perfect example of when a guy is just so intelligent that he can't fail. Whatever your limitation is physically, he just understands how you can overcome it. So, yeah, that's just been so impressive to me, and that's on me. I deserve every ounce of ridicule my way for questioning him.
Well, I mean, you clearly weren't the only one to question him, because he was one of the most surprising fallers, I would say, in the draft. Like, once the Knicks were on the clock at 8, that seemed like a natural landing spot for him. And then they passed for Toppin. And then the Wizards at 9, the Suns at 10, any of those teams could have pulled the trigger on him, and they all passed him up. So I don't think you're the only one who had that those questions about, I don't know whether it was the shot release or they just liked other prospects more. But, yeah, I mean, he's been arguably the steal of the draft so far, which I think, you know, for the people who were high on him coming into the draft, probably could have predicted that when he fell to number 12.
I actually have a different steal of the draft, but we'll come back to that.
Okay, all right. Well, so looking ahead, I mean, the Kings are doing their normal Kings thing and underwhelming as usual. Do you think Fox and Haliburton are the long-term backcourt? How does Buddy Hield factor into this picture?
Yeah, so that's the thing, right? I think it's difficult to answer, because I don't think the current style that they're playing and the current coach on the sideline in Luke Walton should be there, which skews everything, right? Because if they get a good coach in there, everything could look drastically different. But when you look at their, you know, their skill set, I kind of like it. Like, Fox is never going to be a smooth, natural three-point shooter who is like routinely over 40%, I don't think. And that's not to say he won't get better as a shooter. I think he already has in certain respects, but, you know, he's not going to be Buddy Hield,
right?
And, you know, Tyrese Haliburton, I doubt that the Kings are going to, you know, completely alter his shot release. Maybe it's because the Kings, they'll be like, 50% from the field, 47 from three, 82 from the line. Yeah, let's fix that. Maybe we need to fix that because it's the Kings. Let's hope not. And I think that could be a very interesting trio, depending on, you know, who you have coming off the bench and how everything works out. Or maybe you even go crazy and start Buddy at the three, and then you just forget every ounce of defense and just go all in offense with the right coach. I don't know, but skills wise, I kind of see it fitting very well. I like how Haliburton reads the court. Like, that was one thing that was never in question to me either coming out of college. Like, that was his passing. His passing was absolutely a major strength of his. And for Fox especially, who's so quick and get into the transition flow of things very quickly. Like, yeah, that's a natural fit right there. You know, Haliburton gets the board, Fox leaks out. That's a quick transition opportunity right there. And if you have Bunny running along looking for those trailing threes, that could get dangerous in a very, very quickly. And then depending on what happens with Marvin Bagley, whether they keep him or not, you know, he's got more potential to him than what he's shown. So he could be one of those guys who just Amar'e Stoudemire's it up by running to the rim and gets dunks. But we'll see. It seems like De'Aaron Fox's dad wants him out.
Right.
It's all weird.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'll say this about Haliburton. The Kings have a 125 offensive rating with him on the court, according to Basketball Reference, which is just outrageous. Their defense is horrific. They're 119, so that would be among the worst of all time. I think the Kings so far this year are pacing to have the worst defense of all time. So that's not great, and that is clearly an area that they'll need to shore up in time. But, yeah, I mean, especially given where they got him, I think the Kings have to be thrilled about the early returns on Tyrese Haliburton.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you named Patrick Williams as the other rookie that has impressed you most. What have you seen out of him?
oh, it's his maturity and the way that he just plays within himself. I mean, there is a pretty big chance, honestly, that he could come out as the best player in this entire draft class. And, you know, Lord knows, I'm skeptical of the Bulls. I have been for years. So I gave new management a shot. Still, I am still giving them a shot. And you know, they wanted Patrick Williams. There was this part of me that was like, oh, are you just buying into the you know, the hype around him over the past couple of weeks? Are you sure? Like, but when they selected him, I was just thinking, you know, okay, fine, I'm going to roll the dice on this one and give them a chance. He's looked just, I mean, he's looked so great. Defensively, there's so much potential. His mid-range game is already, like, NBA lethal. He's just so smart. He does have certain rookie turnovers here and there that you kind of expect. But as the second youngest player in the league, playing at this level of maturity, and when you hear him speak as well, there's also the personality factor that comes in. I mean, he's just wired in a way where nothing really faces him. It's like, oh, you're being asked to guard LeBron James one night, then it's Kawhi Leonard the other, and then it's Giannis Antetokounmpo in the third, and he's just, okay, give it. I want it. I want that challenge. And he's like, hell, he's doing it. I mean, LeBron gave him major props, and as he should. You know, he struggled a little bit with Kawhi in that major third quarter of the Kawhi Leonard-Zach LaVine showdown, but otherwise, like, really kept in front of him and read him out. And I just love his composure. There is a genuine two-way talent potential there. And the way that he's producing right now is not as someone who is heavily featured in the offense, unlike, well, a Tyrese Haliburton, honestly. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really faze him. Like, he's okay with taking spots, but spot ups, and like if someone closes out really hard, he's not, you know, the type of guy who doesn't know what to do. Like, he takes one sidestep dribble and then takes it to the rim, or stops and pops for a mid-range Jimmy. Like, there are so many advanced things to his game that I really enjoy and was extremely surprised seeing coming in. I thought he was going to be a really long-term project.
Mm-hmm.
He could be he's already a full-time starter right now and well-deserving of it. Like, he could be one of their best players next year.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, I asked you this similar question about the Kings for the Bulls, too. I mean, they're okay. They're 7-10, but they're not... I think the play-in tournament is probably their ceiling this year. So yeah, this is not necessarily the core they're going to have moving forward, as we talked about with Jason Pat a few episodes ago.
Right.
How do you see him fitting in long-term? Do you think... I mean, right now he's starting next to Markkanen. Wendell Carter's missed the last couple games, but he's been starting, you know, alongside Markkanen and Wendell Carter.
Right.
Do you think he projects long-term as a three? Do you think they'll move him up to the four if and when Laurie's gone next year? How do you see this working?
Yeah, I think he's a new age four who can play three. He's a new version of those Harrison Barnes, TJ Warren type of players. Guys who were just exclusively at the three at some point, but just functions better as a four man now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be the interesting play. To just see Williams and Wendell Carter Jr. play together for an extended period of time, just from a defensive standpoint, could be extremely interesting. Now, offensively, there's the question, how should they get better? Because Kobe White is their point guard right now. He's clearly not a point guard. So it would behoove the Bulls to get a playmaker in there to actually accelerate the development of a Patrick Williams and a Wendell Carter. But that is down the road. But right now, I think he's probably the one guy that if you're a team and you call up for him, like they're like, no, we're not even discussing it.
Okay. Yeah. I know where you stand on Lowry, but even compared to Wendell, you think he's more of a definite long-term keeper?
Yeah, I think so. Wendell was supposed to take a leap this year, which he just has not. It's been a little bit weird of a transition period for him, going from a high blitzing defensive scheme to more of a drop coverage. And it supposedly was going to play right into his hand, and it just hasn't. So that's pretty unfortunate. There's still long time left in the season, so let's see when he gets back and when he's healthy. But no, I think Patrick Williams, of anyone who isn't Zach LaVine, in terms of not being established, I think he's the guy with the highest stock within the Bulls organization. They love him.
Interesting. So let's pivot to the very top of the draft.
Yes.
The Timberwolves took Anthony Edwards with the number one pick. Should they regret that?
Well, it's only been 16 games. Let's get it out of the way. The numbers have been ugly. 34% from the field, 27% from three. You know, very little rebounding, very little playmaking. It's not looking that good when you look at the raw statistics. So I've actually decided just to ignore those when it comes to Anthony Edwards, because what I was looking for him was, is there this intensity? Because it seems like he was just kind of coasting over at Georgia, waiting to get drafted. And you were kind of concerned, I think, to the point where you would look at him and go, is he going to bring that to the NBA? And I don't think so. It doesn't look like that, to be honest with you. I mean, sure, every rookie will once in a while have the whole deer in the headlights moment where he'll just mentally check out because he's made three mistakes in a row and he's just hard on himself and like down on himself. So that happens to everyone. But for him, I definitely see, you know, someone who really wants it. I see someone who fights for it. I see someone who's scrapping. I would even look at all the shot attempts. And even though there are a lot of misses in there, there's a level of enthusiasm with him. Like, he really wants to be a part of this. And sometimes it leads to a bad shot because he just desperately wants to be a contributor. And, you know, that's a learning process. That's him being young. That's him being spontaneous. That's him being a little bit over-enthusiastic. But ultimately, I've been pretty, you know, positive around him, shooting percentages aside. But, you know, he will need to get better, of course. I could see him having a pretty big first to second year leap.
Yeah. I mean, right now it's worth noting that the Timberwolves are just basically set up for anyone to fail. I mean, Karl-Anthony Towns has played four games. Yeah. D'Angelo Russell has missed a few. Josh Okogie has missed a few. And we said coming into the season they were already, you know, overstocked in the backcourt and did not have enough talent in the front court. So
right.
They were basically, there was no way they were going to have a good season, even if Edwards hit the ground running. So, you know, his advanced metrics are just a train wreck right now. I mean, a 6.7 PER, minus 4.8 OBPM, minus 4.4 DPPM, like the lowest box plus minus, I believe, of anyone in the draft class who's actually playing regular minutes. Killian Hayes is slightly lower, but he got hurt pretty early on. So none of that is good, but it is worth keeping in mind. He's not, you know, he's, again, four games with Karl-Anthony Towns. If you play, they played 16 games so far. So if you play 12 games without your best player, everyone else is going to have a trickle-down effect of struggling as well. Like, he's not cut out to be a number one option right now, and probably not ever. Right. He's more of a complimentary player, and they're all of them are being pushed into roles that they are uncomfortable carrying without Towns.
Right. Naz Reid has been the best player on their team in some games.
Yeah.
And like, that, good on Reid. I'm not knocking Reid. Like, he's been good. But I'm just saying that should never be a situation when you have Karl-Anthony Towns, Malik Beasley, D'Angelo Russell, and even Anthony Edwards on the team, right? Like, that should just never happen. But it's a young squad, lots of inconsistencies, as you said. And I've pointed this out before. I still think there's a problem in going with guys who are primarily one-way players. Mm-hmm. Like Josh Okogie, like defender. Jared Culver, defender. Those guys just do not have the offensive games to really warrant getting 36, 37 minutes per game. So you're trying to cover off of that. Like, okay, now we need offense. In with Anthony Edwards. Now we need defense. Yeah, out with you. In with Okogie. Like, it's just not a sustainable method.
Yeah. My question about Edwards was less about him, because, again, I think anyone would have struggled in this situation early on.
Yeah.
And more about LaMelo Ball and how quickly he seems to have hit the ground running.
Yeah, no, it's like he is leading all rookies in rebounds and assists, and you know he's a guy who fills up the box scores. Like, he's already had a triple double this year, and you know he's hitting the long range threes, and he has great court vision. Unfortunately, he cannot guard a chair.
Right.
Defensively, he is atrocious, and I realize that people point to the 1.4 steals and 0.4 blocks in 24 minutes and go, that's actually pretty decent. Yeah, it is, but it means literally nothing at this point. He is just horrid on defense, and you know, most rookies are, but this is really bad, and especially for someone that size. Normally, and that was actually one of the things that a lot of scouts were kind of banking on with LaMelo was, you know, he's 6'6", maybe even 6'7". So when he comes in, just his physical presence defensively, just his height, that will just automatically deter some players from going at him, or at least he'll get a hand in their faces or whatever. And it just hasn't quite worked out like that. It's been ugly. So I think there is that whole thing going on. Is like, is he going to be primarily just a one-way player? Like, what can we expect out of him? There's a reason he isn't starting, let me just put it that way. But that said, he is definitely further along than I thought he would be. And I think most would agree with that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's there's a lot of positive signs here. And like, you know, Kevin Farragut, an active member of NBA Twitter, has repeatedly said high turnover numbers for rookies isn't necessarily a bad thing. And I actually agree with him on that. It means they take chances, and he certainly takes chances. So we could look at one of the best passers in the NBA in a couple of years. But what I wonder is he going to be one of those guys who fills up the stat sheet and doesn't really have the same impact as his stats suggest? That mm-hmm. is probably my concern with him.
Yeah, I think with regard to the steals, a lot of those are coming more on gambles where, you know, he'll shoot yes. into a passing lane, and if he gets it, great, because that's going to lead to a takeaway, and if not, he's going to be way out of position and lead to a defensive breakdown. So yeah, I think that's a fair observation. And you know, the shooting percentages aren't stellar at 40.1% overall, 31.2 from three, but just the way he plays and some of the, I mean, his passing vision is already elite, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah,
like some of the things he can do with the ball is just very unique in terms of, you know, not many guys can make some of these passes either. You know, he had like the one touchdown pass, I forget who he threw it to, but it was like a full court outlet. And just some of the stuff around the rim too, where he, you know, he's like basically handing the ball off behind his back. It's like very crafty. And he seems to have infused the Hornets with some energy. Like, I feel like it's only a matter of time before he supplants Devontae Graham in the starting lineup, who has really been struggling this year. 33.8 overall, 33.6 from three.
Yeah. It has not been pretty in Charlotte, and that's partly why everything has gone through Gordon Hayward. That's why you were seeing like the immense deadlines from him. It's because he's basically handling everything at this point.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think with LaMelo, I would be surprised if he starts. I really would. I think James Borrego even came out and said something along the lines of like the defense and the turnovers, that he was that just wasn't up to par yet. So we could be looking at a guy who's coming off the bench for the entirety of his rookie season. In which case, I would like to point something out. You know how I crap so often on the Sixth Man of the Year award?
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, I know he's not a defender, but he's an all-around player, at least when you look at the rebounding. And he's a playmaker, so it's not just a guy coming in and chucking shots. He's a guy who can give you points, give you rebounds, give you assists. That matters, right?
That's fair. Yeah. He'll be in the mix if he doesn't move into the starting lineup, but
yeah.
I wonder with the Hornets moving forward, because you're right, it's been a lot has been going through Gordon Hayward and Terry Rozier. Thank God we didn't bet this year about his shooting percentages, because he's been ridiculous. He's shooting above 40. He's almost 43 from three. Not even from the field, from three.
I know. He's been on fire. What did we bet on last year? I think I still owe you a beer, right?
Yeah, it was 40% overall, because he had never cracked it before that year. And then he squeaked over last year, and now he's just good.
Man, I had to coach Drisley again tonight then.
No, but I wonder, so from the Timberwolves perspective, I hear you on the defense, and it's fair to question that moving forward, but I wonder if, A, given their team construct, they shouldn't have cared, because it's not like Towns or D'Angelo Russell are great on that end either. Like, if they're just going to double down on, we're just going to, you know, kind of what the a poor man's version of what the Brooklyn Nets are doing, where we're just going to score 130 every night, and we don't really care about defense. Like, did they pass up the best player because of their team construct, and specifically because of D'Angelo Russell, who, with all due respect, might not be good enough to justify passing up the best player in this draft?
I mean, yes, they did. But it's not LaMelo. I keep coming back to this. I made a joke on draft night where I said, you know, the Wolves should just take Patrick Williams and throw everything out of whack.
Mm-hmm.
Now I kind of think they should.
He would certainly fit better and fill a lot of the holes.
Yeah, like a lot of them. He would come in as a legit two-wing forward, combo forward at this point. He would just solve so many of their issues. He wouldn't grab minutes at the two or the three, the one, like sometimes Anthony Edwards needs to do. It's... Yeah, I would probably rather go in that direction. But no, I mean, if it's up to Edwards or Ball, who at that point in time were, like, considered the two best perimeter options, yes, you could absolutely make the argument it should have been LaMelo, and then you just kind of probably would have gone in a different direction with some of the other guys on the roster. I think the concern ultimately was LaMelo's floor, right? Because right now we're seeing, you know, him excelling in the NBA, but that was not a certainty coming into the season, right? Everyone was like skeptical. It was the very low sample size, small sample size in Australia. It was the fact that he shot the ball horrifically. It was defensive concerns. It was the whole ideology of, yeah, it's probably going to take him a couple of years if he even hits it. Like, there are some people in the NBA right now who are looking at what he's doing and saying, I didn't expect this. I thought this would first come, like, in year three or four. So, like, are we looking at a best-case situation? I don't know. Maybe we are. But you can't, I mean, you just can't, I think, draft out of, you know, best-case scenarios all the time. I think you need to be realistic, and I think the Wolves tried to be realistic.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, ultimately, the answer always was trade down from number one. But I just don't think they found takers to do so.
They tried. I mean, yeah. We've read numerous reports about this. They were so desperate. I mean, their price for trading down kept getting lower. I mean, they were really desperate to trade down. So this is one of those situations where I just can't fault them. You know, every year, or not every year, but every time we see like a bust or someone who might not have should gotten drafted number one, we always laugh at that team. I can't do it this year or last year, but it was just such a weird season, and the draft class was just not where it should have been. And like, they tried everything they could to just move off of that spot. Like, I just can't fault them.
Yeah. And I don't think it's going to be as detrimental as like the Kings passing up Luka Doncic.
Right. Exactly.
So, you know, with all due respect to LaMelo, who I think has been really, really good. I think we'll do quarter season awards soon, but spoiler, he's going to be my rookie of the year so far.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
I've watched far more Hornets games than I expected this year because of him. Like, he is exactly what that team needs. He's just adds so much excitement and energy to that franchise that they haven't had since, like, early days, Kemba. Not even late days, because by late days, it was just depressing.
Mm. Yeah. No, I agree with you. There's definitely an excitement factor with him. I'm still a little bit skeptical as to, you know, just how good of an NBA player he's going to be in terms of the win-loss column. But I definitely agree with you. What's happening right now is a huge positive for the Charlotte Hornets.
So let's hit the other top three pick in this year's draft, Mort. James Wiseman, who started for most of the year, but just got pushed to the bench last night for the first time.
Mm.
on the surface, pretty good numbers, 12.6 rebounds, 1.5 blocks, and only 20 minutes. I mean, Draymond Green has been in his ear nonstop this season, and it was early in the game against the Timberwolves last night where he blew a pick and roll, and Steve Kerr immediately called a timeout to yell at him. So they're like, the Warriors are very high on this kid, but they're also being extremely hard on him. What have you seen out of him so far?
Yeah, I'm actually glad they are, because I think that is going to be the best of circumstances for him in terms of becoming better. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't get better within the Golden State Warriors organization, where you have so many great teachers around you, I don't really know what does it for you. Then I don't know if you're wired to be in the NBA and be like a superstar. Wiseman is 19 years old. He didn't really play competitive basketball at all last year, like 3 games, and that was it for Memphis. So he's just been rusty, and like, he's still trying to figure out the NBA game. I will say this, there are times when he just finds himself in those weird rhythms where he has like a huge dunk and follows it up with a three, and then 3 quarters go and he doesn't do a damn thing. So it's the inconsistency level at times. It's the defense. Again, a 19-year-old center still trying to figure out NBA pick-and-roll defense. That is not easy, my friends. That is exceedingly difficult, especially for someone 19. So it's a somewhat typical rookie experience for him, I think. A team gave him a very good chance to really make something of it, and he did what he could, and the team decided, yeah, you know what, let's develop you in a different way instead.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to call him very much a work in progress, but yeah, he shows some of these flashes of two-way play, really. I mean, the one that stands out, I think he either blocked a shot or rebounded, ran down the court himself, and then Euro-stepped and finished. It was like, holy hell, this kid's 7 feet tall. This guy should not have that ability to run a trip fast break by himself.
No, there's a lot of creativity to his game. He was one of those guys who came in and people were constantly talking about the ball handling capabilities that he had, and no one really took that serious. And then he started, you know, taking the ball up the court, and he wasn't always successful, but you could see that there's an avenue towards some real potential there. For me, the question is, what happened to the Warriors kind of letting him take threes? Is that a thing? Like, because he seemed to be just letting it fly early on in the season. Now it's been scaled back like a lot, and I just question whether that's the right move. I don't know if that's intentional. I don't know if that's a coaching mandate or whatever, but I think for him, he needs to be one of those guys who just kind of produces in the flow of the game. And if that's a three, then it's a three. If that's getting to the line 5 times, it's getting to the line 5 times. I don't want him to be pigeonholed is kind of my point, because I think he's such a unique prospect that you kind of want to cover all bases.
Yeah. And what do you think? I mean, clearly he fits into their long-term picture unless they package that Timberwolves pick with him, which that Timberwolves pick is looking increasingly desirable. You know, top three protected this year, completely unprotected in 2022, which I cannot believe. Mm-hmm. They're looking at potentially adding another impact prospect next year and getting Klay Thompson back as well. So the Warriors are not going away anytime soon.
Oh, can I know you're coming up with a question, but can I interrupt and ask you a question instead? Because I have a very interesting question for you here.
Please do.
So, this was a question I was asked from a Danish follower, and I haven't really like responded back in full because I'm still trying to gauge it. I think you know where I'm going with this.
Okay.
So what if a team this offseason just sheds a ton of money, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. And they they call up the Golden State Warriors and they go, "We'll take Andrew Wiggins and Klay Thompson's contracts off your hands." What is that worth?
I mean, I don't know that the Warriors want to do that trade. Is that crazy to say?
No, it might not be. That's the thing. I legitimately don't know. I can find, like, 500 arguments on both sides for this.
Yeah, I mean, A, I know you're still not willing to be tricked by Andrew Wiggins, but Andrew Wiggins has been better in this role this year. Like, he is, like, this is probably the best stretch of Andrew Wiggins' career, which is weird to say because he's got a very, very, very slightly above average PER. And Klay Thompson, I think there's just that emotional connection with the fan base that they're going to want. Like, I don't think they're going to want a John Wall situation here where they give up on a guy because of a couple injuries and comes back and he looked pretty good. And they're like, oh, crap. we got rid of a franchise icon. We salary dumped a franchise icon for, you know, him to come back and still, like, that shot's probably not going away. He didn't really, you know, the defense would be the bigger concern. But,
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. Like, because the Knicks will probably have enough for two max deals this summer. So, like, if the Knicks called the Warriors and said, we'll give you, we'll take these contracts, what do we have to give you in return? I think they would want, multiple picks for sure.
But that also, including Minnesota's pick, right?
Yeah. And then, but yeah, I mean, like, I don't know that, I don't know if the Warriors have the incentive to give up that much to do this. I think they'd rather just be like, let's run this thing back. Let's add whoever we get with the Minnesota pick or have a completely unprotected 2022 pick. I don't know. I don't think because I just don't think, especially with the free agency as it is, where, you know, so many top guys are already off the market. I don't think they're looking at this class being like, oh yeah, well, we could, if we free up $70 million of cap space, we can go out and get Giannis is gone. We're not, you know, unless Kawhi calls them and says, if you do this, we'll sign with you and leave Paul George in the dust.
As long as I get preferential treatment, yeah.
But even, Steph is on such a big deal and Draymond is too. It's,
I know.
It would be hard to, yeah, I don't
That's think, what I'm saying. 500 yeah. arguments for and against.
Yeah, no, it's a tricky question, but I don't think the Warriors have, I think the Warriors have incentive to just keep building on what they have and trying to bridge these two eras. For as much as we make fun of a lot of teams for trying to do that, there have been some that have successfully pulled it off.
I can't figure, I'm thinking of lopping this question for the timeline because I just didn't know if I would do that and people were like, shh, and it's just a home run answer. Like, you don't trade Klay Thompson. But, like, this is interesting, right?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, it's a fun thought experiment, if nothing else.
Yeah. All right. Well, now, get back to your question. I'm sorry. That was just a slight detour.
Yeah, I think what I was going to ask is, you know, how do you envision, for Wiseman in particular, because we've seen in recent years, centers have been somewhat devalued in free agency, and then, you know, like the Jahlil Okafor thing in the draft, the Sixers take him in number three, and it was just such a very clear mistake. Do you think that pendulum is going to swing back a little bit in favor of drafting centers high? Like, will Wiseman make teams more open to doing so, or do you think he's just such a unique prospect that they'll have to treat him as more of a one-off, and they're still going to, you know, favor two-way wings, guards toward the top of the draft?
So I actually think the pendulum has swung back a little bit because when it comes to centers, specifically centers, I don't think the market has died as much. We just saw NBA teams devalue the position from a financial perspective, but that didn't mean that centers weren't valuable to me. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm beating a dead horse on this. To me, it's the power forward position that's died. I don't think it's the center. I think if you have a big who can defend, who can anchor your defense first and foremost, and who can rebound, and who can rim run, and get you easy points, you know what? Those types of players will always have a place in the NBA, especially if they're flanked by four shooters. I just cannot imagine otherwise. The fact that James Wiseman can shoot himself, he can block shots, There's defensive potential. He can rebound. He can score. He can do a lot of those things. You know, that just makes him even more valuable. So I think he's just one of those guys you can use in a way that's sort of like what, you know, however, because he can shoot, like you're not limited to using him as Clint Capella, just rim running. At the same time, he's not only a stretch big. Like, he's a guy you can basically say, you know, I can run you through pick and rolls. I can run you through pick and pops. You can slip the screen. You can run into the corner instead. There's so many different variations you can use him as, in which I'm just thinking, well, doesn't that make him like the perfect long-term tool to use?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I haven't followed the 2021 class closely enough to know. I think there's at least, you know, Cade Cunningham's not Mobley. Is there?
Wait, what are you asking? If there's a, like a clear cut number one guy?
Well, no, there. I know Cunningham is, but like, are there bigs toward the top of the class?
Oh yeah, Evan Mobley. Mobley. Yeah. He and
is there anyone else?
Yeah,
is it just Mobley.
So this is a little bit difficult. So when you say big, do you mean center or do you just mean players who play big positions?
No, I mean center.
Okay, no, that then basically Evan Mobley. Yeah, so Usman Garuba from Real Madrid as well. But the thing is, he's kind of difficult to peg because he's not super offensively inclined. Then there's Alperen Sengun, which I'm just butchering that name. He's a Turkish center who's just doing... Like, okay, so I'm taking another detour. This is a guy who's 18 years old who plays for one of the best teams in Turkey. And not team, just the real Besiktas. And he's scoring over 20 points a game, grabbing over 10 rebounds, and blocking over two shots, and stealing the ball 1.5 times per game. And for some reason, you know, draft Twitter is like, yeah, he's fine. Like, those Euro numbers... At that age, they even beat out Lucas. Substantially, even. Now, I'm not saying he's Luca, obviously. He would be the number one guy. But I think that's a guy who plays a big position, center, who down the line, NBA teams would be looking at and going, oh, how did we miss on that? So if we include him, I would say two.
Okay, interesting. Well, it's something worth tracking. We'll revisit that discussion once the draft rolls around. We don't even know when the draft is at this point. Sometime later this summer, hopefully.
Right.
So let's go more into some of the later round guys who have stood out. And the first one, the guy who currently leads the class in minutes is Cole Anthony, which I would not have seen coming.
Well, that is not true. The year.
Who's higher than him?
Isaac Okoro is leading the team.
Oh, I'm going by total minutes, but yeah, I guess Okoro on a per game basis.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, okay. Yeah, because Okoro is averaging 36 minutes per game.
Yeah. So okay. Let's start with Anthony, then we'll go back to Okoro because I do want to talk about him too. But yeah, I mean, Cole Anthony, obviously because of the Markel Fultz injury, he was coming off the bench for the first 8 games, then Markel unfortunately tears his ACL. Anthony has started the last 10, it looks like.
And is I think so.
Yeah, and is putting up relatively decent numbers, especially from three. He's shooting 41.5 from three over those 10 games. Knocked down the game winner. I think that was against Minnesota.
Yeah.
So what have you seen out of Anthony so far?
So I've seen what I was hoping to see because he came in from a really tough spot at North Carolina where that was one of the worst shooting college basketball teams in recent years. So he just had no spacing next to him. And he's a very athletic, slashing point guard. So he was just, the lane was just closed off all the time for him because defensive teams just camped out in the paint and at the free throw line because they had no issues leaving UNC shooters alone because they just could knock down shots. So he was playing just against a stacked deck and he could not get any sort of traction. And then, you know, you had a lot of scouts going, well, you can't break through in college without really looking at the circumstances. And I think he slept because of that. I think he could have been chosen higher. I think the offensive game is there. He was already a very good rebounder. That much was also clear at UNC, and that's transferred over. the playmaking is still a work in progress, but let's also not forget the dude is 20 years old. So there's still, you know, plenty of time left for him to develop. But his primary strength is, you know, offense. That is on the offensive side of the floor. Him getting into the teeth of the defense, him shooting the ball, and right now he's like looking around, trying to find a mix that kind of works as both a shooter and a slasher. And, you know, he's not having an easy go either. Like, even after he started, his true shooting percentage is only 50.5, which is horrible. Mm-hmm. But you do see that he plays significantly better as a starter than coming off the bench. It seems like he's taking more ownership, and, you know, that matters. In terms of production in terms of results, yeah, those are not there yet. He isn't putting up all-star numbers. The team isn't necessarily doing better when he's playing. Again, 20 years old, but I like the individual progress that he's made.
Yeah, I mean, they've been in a total tailspin since Fultz went down. They started 6-2. They're 2-8 since.
Yeah,
they did beat the Hornets. That was yesterday, I believe, or 2 days ago.
Yeah. I don't think it's difficult to beat the Hornets, though.
I mean, the Hornets are frisky. They're not. Yeah. They are in that morass of play-in East teams that, you know, are not elite but can beat you on any given night.
Still not worth $49 million for Gordon Hayward, though.
that is true. But yeah, I mean, I think Anthony is getting progressively more comfortable the more experience he gets, which you would expect for someone in that age, given what happened last year at UNC in particular. Evan Fournier also just came back. I think having, you know, that secondary playmaker has been really crucial for him. So I guess moving forward, you know, the Magic just signed Fultz to a 3-year $50 million extension. So how do you see Fultz and Anthony working together long-term next year and beyond?
I actually think this could be a blessing in disguise, because if you have, if you see enough progress out of Cole Anthony and you say, you know what, we cannot take him out of the starting lineup, and you still go, but we also want Fultz in there, and maybe you lose Evan Fournier, who is a free agent this year, and then you slide Fultz in at the two in more of a, you know, I'm putting this in quotation marks, Dwayne Wade role.
Oh, okay.
Like just a guy who can still be on the ball here and there, but is primarily a slasher and someone who can still, you know, be a cutter off the ball and do a lot of that work off athleticism and smarts and whatnot. That could be interesting. I'm not saying that's the final solution, but yeah, I would give that a watch and see what happens.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say, I'm going to put shooting guard in quotes.
Oh, yeah. No, it would be that position, but yeah, shooting. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
God, I mean, if Washington Fultz jump shot came over, that would have been something, right?
At some point, hopefully they'll come back. But yeah, in the meantime, I'm optimistic about Anthony and Fultz working together a long time. I think you're totally right. You know, put Fultz in more of an off-ball role where he can be a slasher cutter, but he can still play make as well. Anthony, I mean, if this shooting is sustainable, where he's shooting 40-some percent or even high 30s, you can make that work. It's just a matter. You can't have two non-shooters on the floor at the same time.
Right.
So let's go to Okoro, because you mentioned him as well. And as you said, he's leading all rookies at almost 36 minutes per game, which is outrageous.
The percentages
are not great. 39.1 overall, 29.4 from three. I mean, I think coming in, that was kind of expected, right? Work in progress on offense, but you're drafting him for the defense. So what have you seen from him on that end of the floor?
Yeah, just intensity, tenacity, you know, all the buzzwords that people like to use, but they hold true. I mean, he's very intense, and he's, you know, he fights over screens, fight under screen. Like, he's very good at the whole KYP mentality, know your personnel. It seems like he studies. He's just a smart player. I want to see him become a little bit more aggressive offensively, because one thing is that he's not necessarily a great shooter. But I think he's got the ball skills to actually do something off the bounce and get into the paint. And he's strong. Like, he's super strong. So I kind of want to see him just challenge people. I have a sense that some guys are just going to bounce off him. And then he'll get, a lot of fouls called and get up to the line a ton. And, you know, he just turns 20 today, so there's a lot of time. A lot of time.
Working in his favor, too, Kevin Porter Jr. forced his way out of Cleveland with a locker room tantrum, and they traded him for a very heavily protected second-round pick to the Houston Rockets.
Yeah.
So that is one less guy you have to worry about if you're Okoro in terms of competing for minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think he was too worried initially, but no, you're right.
Yeah. I mean, he is now very much part. Like, I keep coming back to this, but I just really like what the Cavs are building between him, Sexland backcourt, Jared Allen. I'm already willing to say the Cavs, I don't care about the other three teams in the James Harden deal. The Cavs won the James Harden deal.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. If they get another good piece this year, I mean, look out.
Yeah, they're frisky. Like, they lost to the Lakers last night, but it was a close game, and it's just like it took, I think, what, 46 from LeBron, 21 mm-hmm. in the fourth quarter for him to put them away.
Yeah,
like, they're just gonna be. They got two over the Nets, one of which came with their full big three intact. Like, Colin Sexton just went absolutely nuclear in that game. I don't know, man. I'm excited to see what happens with the Cavs heading into the trade deadline, because there was the obviously BS report that came out yesterday about the Nets being interested in Kevin Love, which just financially cannot work. But they do have a number of bigs. You know, JaVale McGee, Andre Drummond, Jared Allen. Allen's going to be the piece moving forward, presumably. He's going to be a restricted free agent this summer, but they will, I can't imagine they would not re-sign him. So it begs the question of what happened. McGee in particular feels expendable, and I think the Nets' interest in him would be very legitimate.
Yep.
They also have the disabled player exception, I believe, from Spencer Dinwiddie that he would fit into. So now it's probably just a matter of discussing compensation. But yeah, Andre Drummond's the one that I'll be watching really closely heading into the trade deadline to see. I mean, right now the Cavs are 8-9. I think they're seventh in the East. So they might not be in any hurry to break this team apart. They might just want to say, hey, this is the first time we're going to compete for a playoff berth in a couple of years. You know, we're willing to lose Drummond in free agency because we barely gave anything up to get him last year. It's not it's not a huge loss if he walks. But yeah, they might just want to ride this thing out. But if not, I mean, if a team is willing to offer a lightly protected first-round pick for Andre Drummond, I think the Cavs probably bite on that, right?
Oh, immediately, because they only gave up, like, 2 seconds for him.
Yeah, they gave up. It was, like, Brandon Knight, I think. And,
it was nothing. It was nothing.
Yeah, it was gross.
Yep.
All right, so let's wrap up with some of the later round guys who have stood out to you, Mort. I think we have to start with Emmanuel Quickly.
That is my steal of the draft.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just a little ad here. I just uploaded the other day a video on the NBA Show YouTube channel where I talked about the Knicks. And this just goes hand in hand with Quickly. And I love the timing of it because on the day that it published, he had just wrapped up a 31-point performance. So
nice.
Perfect. But I loved Quickly coming in just because of his shooting. The gravity of great shooters, right? It just has this effect on the entire offensive flow, and he's just got that. And for the Knicks to finally have had a good offseason, and yeah, you can argue whether or not Obi Toppin was the right pick and whatnot, but at 25 with Quickly there, I mean, that's great value. That is tremendous value, actually. And he projects as a guy who down the line could be one of those, you know, really high volume shooters. Like, not one of those, you know, oh, I'm going to take like 4 threes per game, but like 11, you know, like one of those guys who hits three or four per game. And that just changes the entire offensive flow for any team that has that type of player. It's just so effortless. Like the way he moves. He's just smart on the ball. Yeah, love everything about him. I think there's tremendous potential to be found there.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm a little mad at him because he's stealing some of Tyrese Maxey's floater mojo. Tyrese Maxey would be clearly the number one floater guy in the class, if not for Emmanuel Quickley, but now he's got some real competition. But yeah, I mean, unbelievable find at 25. Like, if it helps to think that switch it, so like they got Quickley at 8 and Toppin at 25, maybe that'll help Knicks fans feel better about the Toppin pick, because we have not seen a ton out of him yet, although he missed a lot of time so far. So I don't want to jump to judgment there. But yeah, Quickley looks like he looks like a keeper, and there aren't many Knicks prospects you could say that about in recent years.
Right.
You know, Kevin Knox in particular, and cover your ears, Dan Favalli, but Frankie Smokes also, you know, drafted very high, haven't gotten a ton out of him. Getting Quickley that low and getting production out of him in a somewhat crowded rotation, it's really impressive.
Yeah. And you just brought up Tyrese Maxey. So obviously, we need to touch on him really quick as well.
Yep.
Just a blur of an athlete. He's also one of the reasons that I'm going to devalue shooting a little bit more next year in the draft, because it doesn't matter as much when you just have that motor and he's so young. Like, not saying shooting doesn't matter, but it, like, that's going to come. Like, he's a 29% shooter this year. I even think he was a 28-29% shooter last year in college as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's fine. Like, the mechanics aren't bad. It's just a matter of sometimes he takes rookie shots, and rookie shots aren't effective, and it is what it is. So I'm not worried about that. I look at that guy, and I see energy, hustle, defense, offense, you know, dribble drive, putting defenders on their heels, just getting to the basket. I'm seeing all these delicious things all the time, and I'm just going, you know what? That he should have been a top 15, if not top 10, maybe even pick.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I know Daryl Morey, the night of the draft, was super psyched that Maxey fell to 21, given his pre-draft pedigree, or his pre-college pedigree even. And he spoke specifically about the jumper and said, like, I know what he shot last year, but as you said, Morey, he doesn't think the mechanics are broken. They think it's going to jump back up over time. So they weren't super concerned about that. I mean, Maxey had the 39-point game already, where the zombie Sixers had to quote-unquote activate Mike Scott, who was hurt, just to have 8 players. So I don't want to jump to conclusions there, because it was, you know, he had to hoist that many shots out of necessity rather than they were like, oh yeah, we're going to feed this kid, you know, 33 shots.
I'm still super upset he didn't crack 40.
So is Doc. Doc wanted him to run a play, so he got 40. Yeah. But yes, I mean, I think the Sixers, you know, should feel very good about what they've gotten out of him so far. He's honestly, he's been more of a factor in the rotation than I expected him to be coming into the season.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, given the weird offseason, like, Doc particularly was hammering home, like, we just aren't going to rush Maxey along here. And then his entire team got wiped out by COVID protocols, and he had to take that one back. So, you know, Maxey already has, I think, 6 starts to his name and played well in most of them. He's started to slow down a little bit the past few games, but that's also not unexpected with, you know, the Sixers' big names coming back. But
right.
I mean, I guess if we're doing a redraft today, where would you put Maxey in Quickley?
Yeah, so I take Maxey over Quickley still. And it's not really fair, because when you go back and look, like, so many rookies have not even cracked 100 minutes yet.
Right.
So, like, you could go seek Najee out of Arizona at 22, at least for Quickley to go up there. So that's one guy you definitely get above him. But if you really want to go high up, you can, I don't know, like, Jalen Smith maybe at 10 if you really want to be feisty. Nesmith hasn't produced a lot from Boston either, but that's been more of a minutes thing. And Josh Green, I kind of believe in Josh Green, though. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's difficult.
Sadiq Bey's played well. Precious Achiuwa's played well.
Yeah, yeah. No, but I would still take him higher. Devin Vassell is higher up. I would probably take Maxie over Jalen Smith at this point. Because I think ultimately Jalen Smith is not going to turn into the center that I want him to become, and he's going to turn into like one of those old school power forwards that I just detest. Which I don't hope is true, by the way. But we'll see. So because of that, he's definitely one of those guys I'd be willing to move down. But either way, we're going to be doing a redraft in a couple of years on this one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And this was kind of what we expected coming into the draft, too, right? It was, there isn't this clear-cut franchise guy. There's no Zion. There's no Luka. There's no Ben Simmons. We have some guys at the top who, like, probably have all-star potential, and I think it's fair to say, at least, you know, given the early returns, I could very well see LaMelo, Wiseman, even Patrick Williams developing into all-stars one day.
Yeah.
But the calling card was the depth, where it was like, there isn't a huge difference between number 10 and number 30 at this point. So I think we are going to see in a couple of years when we do a redraft, like, there are going to be a lot of guys who went in this, you know, 6 through 10, 6 through 12, 6 through 14 range, they were like, in retrospect, we probably could have bumped them 15 spots down and not have any regrets about it.
Yeah. No, that's going to be a fun one. And I don't think we need to get into, like, Desmond Bane and Xavier Tillman, because we covered the Grizzlies on our last episode pretty thoroughly, and we talked about those guys. So,
Both have been fantastic. I do think Peyton Pritchard also deserves a shout out. I know he suffered a grade one sprain of his right MCL against Philly, I believe, which looked a lot worse when it happened than it thankfully was. So that's good. But yeah, I mean, he's been their best rookie by far.
Mm.
And he went 26th.
26th. And, yeah.
Yeah. And Nesmith went 14th. So. Again, it's similar to the Knicks situation where you just mentally flip the two and you feel better about those picks.
Right. And as you were talking, we just got a Shams bomb.
Oh, boy.
Or not a bomb. He says, the Pelicans, viewed as a key team in NBA trade market, are receiving calls on Lonzo Ball and JJ Redick from interested teams and have shown openness to discussing both, per sources.
Wow.
Groundbreaking. We are willing to trade Lonzo Ball.
Well, I'm glad we touched on them a couple weeks ago, because
you know what, I just say Lonzo for Lauri and let it go. Just do it.
Ooh,
just
that's
get it
actually
done.
Interesting.
I mean, why not?
I guess I'm trying to think, like, how would Lauri fit into that front court mix since they also got Steven Adams?
Yeah. No, well, he's not a center, so he would probably have to. Yeah, I don't know.
Bump Zion to the 3 and Brandon Ingram to the 2?
That sounds dangerous and not in a good way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I guess you could have Lauri as the nominal 5 and have Zion at the 4 and. I don't know.
They would definitely flank Zion with shooting. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. I know. Pelicans fans have been clamoring for not having 4 non-shooters in that lineup. So, Lauri would certainly help in that regard. But hey, if they want to challenge the Kings for having the NBA's worst defense, I guess that's one way they could go about it. Any other rookies that you want to shout out more before we get going here?
No, not yet. Let me just put it this way. It's a little bit early for me to... There are some guys that I'm keeping my eye on, but we're way too early.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I've been encouraged by Isaiah Joe in limited minutes.
Yeah,
but
he was one of those guys. I had a feeling you'd mention him, you homer.
Well, I mean, if... The Sixers wanted to be completely transparent when they were going to draft him at 49 and no one took their No one took the bait. Good for the other 29 teams. I also, Jayshon Tate, I think, also deserves a plug. Went undrafted, but has been good for the Houston Rockets, who are in all sorts of disarray with COVID and injuries in the James Harden trade. But, yeah, it seems like a pretty good find for them.
Yeah, and I'll just say one thing. Someone saved Jamias Ramsey from Sacramento. Oh, I'm not kidding. I am not kidding. That dude, I believe in him. From what I saw last year at Texas Tech, I'm seeing a guy who could really become one of the most versatile scorers as a combo guard in this league. Not as just like a full-time starter or anything, but like as someone who comes off the bench and just gets buckets and stretches the floor. I think that is a guy you should look at. So if you're a young team out there and you want to take a flyer on somebody in a trade, seek out Jamias Ramsey.
I think someone saved player X from the Kings could apply to literally everyone on the Kings.
This is true as well, yes.
Well, on that note, let's wrap up. So thank you all, as always, for listening in today. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thank you for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Also, thank you to Manscaped for the support. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code NBAPOD at manscaped.com. That is 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com, and use the code NBAPOD. Your balls will thank you. On that note, I am Brian Toporek. I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, Sixers-Lakers tomorrow. You ready?
Definitely, man.
All right, enjoy.
You too. Don't die.